Bailey tilted his head. Is that all? Well, I wouldn't want anyone seeing me do that. It wasn't right. It's embarrassing. He put his cup on the table next to him and rested his hands on his lap, his palms in a gentle embrace. So in general, would you say you behave differently when you know you're being watched? Sure, of course. And when you'll be held accountable? Yes. And when there will be a historical record, that is, when or if your behavior will be permanently accessible, that a video of your behavior, for example, will exist forever? Yes. Good. And do you remember my talk from earlier in the summer about the ultimate goal of sea change? I know it would eliminate most crime if there was full saturation. Bailey seemed pleased. Right. Correct. Everyday citizens like Gary Katz and Walt Lefebvre in this instance, because they took the time to set up their cameras, they helped keep us all safe. The crime was minor in this case, and there were no victims, thank God. You're alive. Marion's business and the kayaking industry generally lives to see another day. But one night of selfishness from you could have risked it all. The individual act has reverberations that can be nearly endless. Do you agree? I do. I know, it's unconscionable. And here, May again had the feeling that she was a very short-sighted person who repeatedly jeopardized all she'd been given by the circle. Mr. Bailey, I can't believe I did this, and I know you're wondering if I fit in here. I just want you to know how much I value my position here and your faith in me, and I want to honor that. I'll do anything to make this up to you. Seriously, I'll take on any extra work. I'll do anything. Just tell me. Bailey's face broke into a highly amused grin. May, your job isn't in jeopardy. You're here for good. Annie's here for good. Sorry if you believed otherwise, for even a second. We don't want either of you to ever leave. That's very good to hear. Thank you, May said, though her heart was hammering harder now. He smiled, nodding, as if happy and relieved to have all that settled. But this whole episode gives us a very important teachable moment, don't you think? The question seemed rhetorical, but May nodded anyway. May, he said, when is a secret a good thing? May took a few seconds on this. When it can protect someone's feelings? For example? Well, she fumbled. Let's say you know your friend's boyfriend is cheating on her, but what? You don't tell your friend? Okay, that's not a good example. May, are you ever happy when a friend keeps a secret from you? May thought about the many small lies she'd told to Annie recently. Lies that she'd not only spoken, but typed. Lies made permanent and undeniable. No, but I understand when they have to. That's interesting. Can you think of a time when you were happy one of your friends kept something from you? May could not. Not at the moment. She felt sick. Okay, Bailey said. For now, we can't think of good secrets between friends. Let's move on to families. In a family, is a secret a good thing? Theoretically, do you ever think, you know what would be great to keep from my family? A secret. May thought of the many things her parents were likely keeping from her, the various indignities her father's illness caused them. No, she said. No secrets within a family? Actually, May said, I don't know. There are definitely things you don't want your parents to know. Would your parents want to know these things? Maybe. So you're depriving your parents of something they want. This is good? No, but maybe better for all. Better for you. Better for the keeper of the secret. Some dark secret is better kept from the parents. Is this a secret about some wonderful thing you've done? Perhaps knowing about it would bring just too much joy to your parents? May laughed. No. Clearly a secret is something you don't want them to know about because you're ashamed or you want to spare them from knowing you screwed up. But we agree they would like to know. Yes. And are they entitled to know? I guess. Okay. So can we agree that we're talking about a situation where, in a perfect world, you're not doing anything you'd be ashamed of telling your parents? Sure, but there are other things they might not understand. Because they were never sons or daughters themselves? No, but May, do you have any gay relatives or friends?
Sure.
Do you know how different the world was for gays before and after people began coming out?
I have an idea of it.
Bailey stood and attended to the tea set. He poured more for himself and for May and sat down again.
I don't know if you do.
I was from the generation that struggled greatly with coming out. My brother is gay, and he was 24 before he admitted it to my family, and until then, it nearly killed him. It was a tumor festering inside him, and it was growing every day. But why did he think it would be better kept inside? When he told our parents, they barely blinked. He had created all this drama in his mind, all this mystery and weight around his big secret, and part of the problem, historically, was with other people keeping similar things secret. Coming out was so difficult until millions of other men and women came out. Then it got a lot easier, don't you agree? When millions of men and women came out of the closet, it made homosexuality not some mysterious so-called deviance, but a mainstream life path. You follow?
Yes, but... And I would argue that any place in the world where gays are still persecuted, you could instantly achieve great progress if all the gays and lesbians came out publicly at once.
Then whoever is persecuting them, and all those who tacitly support this persecution, would realize that to persecute them would mean persecuting at least 10% of the population, including their sons, daughters, neighbors, and friends, even their own parents. It would be instantly untenable. But the persecution of gays or any minority group is made uniquely possible through secrecy.
Okay, I hadn't thought of it that way.
That's fine, he said, satisfied, and sipped his tea. He ran his finger over his upper lip, drying it. So we've explored the damage of secrets within the family and between friends, and the role of secrecy in persecuting large classes of people. Let's keep on our quest to find a use for a policy of secrecy. Should we look into politics? Do you think a president should keep secrets from the people she or he governs?
No, but there have to be some things that we can't know, for national security alone.
He smiled, happy, it seemed, that she'd said what he expected her to say.
Really, May?
Do you recall when a man named Julian Assange leaked several million pages of secret U.S. documents?
I read about it.
Well, first of all, the U.S. government was very upset, as was much of the media. Many people thought this was a serious breach of security and that it presented a clear and present danger to our men and women in uniform here and abroad. But do you remember if any soldiers ever actually were harmed by these documents being released?
I don't know.
None were. Not a one. Same thing happened in the 70s with the Pentagon Papers. Not one soldier got even a splinter due to the release of these documents. The main effect, I remember, of these documents being made public is that we found out that many of our diplomats are gossipy about the leaders of other countries. Millions of documents. And the main takeaway was that U.S. diplomats thought Gaddafi was a kook, with all his female bodyguards and strange eating habits. If anything, the release of the documents just put these diplomats on better behavior. They were more careful about what they said.
But national defense, what about it?
The only time we're in danger is when we don't know the plans or motives of the countries we're supposedly at odds with, or when they don't know our plans, but worry about them, right?
Sure.
But what if they did know our plans and we knew theirs? You'd suddenly be free of what they used to call the risk of mutually assured destruction, and instead, you'd arrive at mutually assured trust. The U.S. has no purely nefarious motives, right? We're not planning to wipe some country off the map. Sometimes, though, we take surreptitious steps to get what we want. But what if everyone was, and had to be, open and upfront?
It would be better?
Bailey smiled broadly. Good. I agree. He put his cup down and again rested his hands in his lap. May knew she shouldn't press him, but her mouth got ahead of her.
But you can't be saying that everyone should know everything.
Bailey's eyes widened, as if pleased she'd led him to an idea he coveted. Of course not. But I am saying that everyone should have a right to know everything, and should have the tools to know everything. There's not enough time to know everything, though I certainly wish there was. He paused, lost briefly in thought,
then returned his focus to May.
I understand you weren't very happy about being the subject of Gus's love-love demonstration.
It just caught me by surprise. He hadn't told me about it beforehand.
Is that all?
Well, it presented a distorted impression of me.
Was the information he presented incorrect? There were factual mistakes?
Well, it wasn't that. It was just piecemeal. And maybe that made it seem incorrect. It was taking a few slivers of me and presenting that as the whole me. It seemed incomplete.
Right.
May, I'm very glad you put it that way.
As you know, the circle is itself trying to become complete. We're trying to close the circle at the circle.
He smiled at his own wordplay.
But you know the overall goals of completion, I assume.
She didn't.
I think so,
she said. Look at our logo, he said, and pointed to a wall screen where, on his cue, the logo appeared.
See how that C in the middle is open? For years it's bothered me, and it's become symbolic of what's left to do here, which is to close it.
The C on the screen closed and became a perfect circle.
See that? He said. A circle is the strongest shape in the universe. Nothing can beat it. Nothing can improve upon it. Nothing can be more perfect. And that's what we want to be. Perfect. So any information that eludes us, anything that's not accessible, prevents us from being perfect. You see?
I do, May said, though she wasn't sure she did.
This is in line with our goals for how the circle can help us, individually, feel more complete, and feel that others' impressions of us are complete, are based on complete information, and to prevent us from feeling, as you did, that some distorted view of ourselves is presented to the world. It's like a broken mirror. If we look into a broken mirror, a mirror that's cracked or missing parts, what do we get?
Now it made sense to me. Any assessment, judgment, or picture utilizing incomplete information would always be wrong.
We get a distorted and broken reflection, she said.
Right, Bailey said. And if the mirror is whole?
We see everything.
A mirror is truthful, correct?
Of course, it's a mirror. It's reality.
But a mirror can only be truthful when it's complete. And I think for you, the problem with Gus's love-love presentation was that it wasn't complete.
Okay.
Okay?
Well, that's true, she said. She wasn't sure why she opened her mouth, but the words tumbled out before she could restrain them. But I still think there are things, even if just a few, that we want to keep to ourselves. I mean, everyone does things alone or in the bedroom that they're ashamed of.
But why should they be ashamed?
Maybe not always ashamed, but things they don't want to share, that maybe they don't think people will understand or will change the perception of them.
Okay. With that kind of thing, one of two things will eventually happen. First, we'll realize that whatever behavior we're talking about is so widespread and harmless that it needn't be secret. If we demystify it, if we admit that it's something we all do, then it loses its power to shock. We move toward honesty, and we move away from shame. Or second, and even better, if we all, as a society, decide that this is behavior we'd rather not engage in, the fact that everyone knows or has the power to know who's doing it, this would prevent the behavior from being engaged in. This is just as you said. You wouldn't have stolen if you knew you were being watched.
Right.
Would the guy down the hall view porn at work if he knew he was being watched?
No, I guess not.
So problem solved, right?
Right, I guess.
May, have you ever had a secret that festered within you and once that secret was out, you felt better?
Sure.
Me too. That's the nature of secrets. They're cancerous when kept within us, but harmless when they're out in the world.
So you're saying there should be no secrets?
I have thought on this for years, and I have yet to conjure a scenario where a secret does more good than harm. Secrets are the enablers of antisocial, immoral, and destructive behavior. Do you see how this is?
I think so, but
you know what my spouse said to me years ago when we got married? She said that whenever we were apart, for instance, when I might go on a business trip, I should behave as if there were a camera on me, as if she were watching.
Way back when, she was saying this in a purely conceptual way, and she was half kidding, but the mental picture helped me. If I found myself alone in a room with a woman colleague, I would wonder, what would Karen think of this if she were watching from a closed-circuit camera? This would gently guide my behavior, and it would prevent me from even approaching behavior she wouldn't like, and of which I wouldn't be proud. It kept me honest. You see what I mean?
I do, May said.
I mean, the trackability of self-driving cars is solving a lot of this, of course. Spouses increasingly know where the other has been, given the car logs where it's been driven. But my point is, what if we all behaved as if we were being watched? It would lead to a more moral way of life. Who would do something unethical or immoral or illegal if they were being watched? If their illegal money transfer was being tracked? If their blackmailing phone call was being recorded? If their stick-up at the gas station was being filmed by a dozen cameras and even their retinas identified during the robbery? If their philandering was being documented in a dozen ways? I don't know. I'm imagining all that would be greatly reduced. May, we would finally be compelled to be our best selves, and I think people would be relieved. There would be this phenomenal global sigh of relief. Finally, finally, we can be good. In a world where bad choices are no longer an option, we have no choice but to be good. Can you imagine? May nodded. Now, speaking of relief, is there anything you'd like to tell me before we wrap up?
I don't know. So many things, I guess, May said. But you've been so nice to spend all this time with me, so, May, is there something specific that you've kept hidden from me as we've been together here in this library?
May knew, instantly, that lying was not an option.
That I've been here before, she said.
Have you?
Yes.
But you implied when you entered that you hadn't.
Annie brought me. She said it was some kind of secret. I don't know. I didn't know what to do. I didn't see either way as being ideal. I get in trouble either way.
Bailey smiled extravagantly.
See, that's not true. Only lies get us in trouble. Only the things we hide. Of course I knew you'd been here. Give me some credit.
But I was curious that you hid this from me. It made me feel distant from you. A secret between two friends, May, is an ocean. It's wide and deep, and we lose ourselves in it. And now that I know your secret, do you feel better or worse?
Better.
Relief?
Yes, relief.
May did feel relief, a surge of it that felt like love, because she still had her job, and she would not have to go back to Longfield, and because her father would stay strong and her mother unburdened. She wanted to be held by Bailey, to be subsumed by his wisdom and generosity.
May, he said,
I truly believe that if we have no path but the right path, the best path, then that would present a kind of ultimate and all-encompassing relief. We don't have to be tempted by darkness anymore. Forgive me for putting it in moral terms. That's a Midwestern churchgoer in me. But I'm a believer in the perfectibility of human beings. I think we can be better. I think we can be perfect or near to it. And when we become our best selves, the possibilities are endless. We can solve any problem. We can cure any disease, end hunger, everything, because we won't be dragged down by all our weaknesses, our petty secrets, our hoarding of information and knowledge. We will finally realize our potential.
May had been dizzy from the conversation with Bailey for days, and now it was Friday, and the thought of going on stage at lunch made concentration almost impossible. But she knew she had to work, to set an example for her pod at the very least, given this would likely be her last full day at CE. The flow was steady but not overwhelming, and she got through 77 customer queries that morning. Her score was 98 and the pod aggregate was 97, all respectable numbers. Her party rank was 1,921, another fine figure, and one she felt comfortable taking into the Enlightenment. At 11:38, she left her desk and walked to the side door of the auditorium, arriving 10 minutes before noon. She knocked, and the door opened. May met the stage manager, an older, almost spectral man named Jules, who brought her into a simple dressing room of white walls and bamboo floors. A brisk woman named Teresa, enormous eyes outlined in blue, sat May down,
looked over her hair and blushed her face with a feathery brush, and applied a